Welcome to Open Book. I'm Richard Walensky discussing Bay Area theater. My guest is Bill English, who is the co-founder and artistic director of SF Playhouse in San Francisco. SF Playhouse is currently featuring Into the Woods through September 6th. What made you decide to bring Into the Woods to SF Playhouse? And it's really a big show with a huge cast.
Oh, yes. It's quite an ambitious undertaking. It's 16 cast members, and this year we've increased our orchestra size to 7, which is almost doubling it over our previous orchestra size. You know, we tend to do a musical in the summer. Did My Fair Lady with a cast of 11, and then we did Camelot last year with a cast of 16, Cabaret with a cast of 16. I've always been a fan of Into the Woods. I guess because I'm such a fan of mythology. I'm kind of a Joseph Campbell fanatic, and I've read all of Jung's work on myths and their origins in the psychosexual development of human beings, and Freud and Eric Fromm's book about mythology. From the Greeks forward, our stories that we tell in our culture reveal sort of the deeper parts of our struggles as humans. And I think, in fact, that's what theater really is. We're really myth makers and myth tellers, giving our audience something that they can take away to help us define what it is to be living.
Had you wanted to do Into the Woods? Had you been thinking about it for a while?
Yeah, actually, we were going to do it the year before. I think we even announced it. And then we found out that some smaller theater company, after we had applied for and been given the rights had also been given to another smaller company, and we called up the people that controlled the play and said, dude, why are you doing this? And they didn't seem to really have a problem with two companies doing the play at the same time, a mere blocks from each other. But we did, and so we scrapped the production and did Camelot instead, and then we rescheduled Into the Woods for this season and set it up so we would have an exclusive Bay Area rights to it.
It's also going to be at Oregon Shakespeare this year, but that's
yes.
Pretty far away, and then there's a movie coming out.
Yeah, too. It seems to be in the wind. Probably be supporting our record box office turnout for this show. People really seem to be enjoying coming to it.
It's a very complex show because there are all these fairy tale characters running around. Each one has songs or portions of songs, and it's sort of almost like wrangling a show rather than merely directing it, I would think.
Well, it's a tremendous challenge. And, you know, Susie Damolano, my wife and co-founder, partner, actually, she directed this show. And it was just a tremendous exercise in dexterity and keeping a dozen balls in the air at the same time, which is, of course, something she's really good at.
What are some of the specific problems that come up with Into the Woods that you wouldn't have with a more sedate show, if you want to call it that?
Well, so much is sung. There's really not a lot of dialogue. Almost all the dialogue is in the second act. And so what the biggest challenge that I think we felt was keeping the story clear from scrap of dialogue to scrap of dialogue. And it just puts a tremendous amount of pressure on the director to make every single moment on stage count. In other words, when you reveal the bakers at the beginning, they simply can't just be baking. We have to see the whole struggle of their relationship, how close they are, how they really want this child right from the beginning in non-spoken theater language.
And at the same time, you've still got two other scenes going on simultaneously.
Exactly.
Which is Cinderella and Jack and the Beanstalk.
So it just requires tremendous clarity in staging. There must be 300 entrances and exits into the woods, and yet every one has to come from a very clear place. You can't just enter. You have to enter with something, and you have to leave with something. And, of course, we were really lucky on this show to have Kimberly Richards, this choreographer kind of slash associate director who attended every rehearsal and just was a tremendous ally in helping us with this physical clarity that the show demands.
And there's also the way the set has to play into it, because so much is going on behind, around, and above.
Yes, and we turned again to Nina Ball to design the set. She designed our last two musicals in the space, My Fair Lady and Camelot, and she's just a tremendous storyteller, you know, as a set designer.
One thing about Sondheim is there also needs to be clarity of diction when someone's singing, which is another issue. Was that kind of implied with the casting, or was it something that Susie had to do?
Well, Susie probably said every day in rehearsals 2 to 3 times, "I didn't understand that." And our musical director, Dave Dabrowski, was also just a fanatic about diction, because there are so many words, and you simply have to hear every one. And that's, I think, been one of the failings of Into the Woods, is that a lot of it just gets by the audience's ears, and you don't, like I say, there's only 8 scraps of word that tell you why this is happening, why the witch only has 3 midnights to do this thing. It's very difficult to get clarity. Thanks to one of our most powerful donors, we really upgraded our sound system, because we had complaints last summer that in the room in our new theater at 450 Post that there were some acoustic issues, and we invested a bunch of money in upgrading our sound system and our microphone systems, and we hired a sound engineer separate from a sound designer for the first time on this show, specifically to go after that kind of clarity that you noticed and that many other people have noticed and commented on.
Bill English, there's obviously in any show, there's a lot of ways to play a show. I mean, with Camelot, you went for a Game of Thrones feel. In this show, you're still limited, of course, by the script and by whatever direction that James Lapine put into the script. But there are changes. The idea the narrator is talking to a boy, is that specific to SF Playhouse, or has that been done before?
I don't know that it's been done before. It was definitely Susie's idea. And so we invented the boy character and the narrator slash mystery man, or a combo. Well, you notice that, but they're kind of played by the same actor. It's part of her, I think, impulse to make the story more timeless and more eternal and more a circle of family. You know, the old man telling the 10-year-old boy, who is the same person as the baker's baby, telling him the story, beginnings and ends, all fold and roll together. And I think beyond that, the idea of it being timeless and eternal extended to the production concept, which, as you probably noticed, used a lot of anachronistic elements in the costuming and I think in the set, too.
And cell phones.
And cell phones, yes. There was ancient costuming and medieval costuming and Renaissance costuming and 19th century costuming and 21st century costume. You know, there were lace-up front bodices in combination with vinyl pants for the wolves. So the idea was, I think, to just try to capture a lot of different cultures and a lot of different timelessness to it. Our wig designer did a wonderful job of kind of using contemporary, I think the costume designer, Abra Berman's, we called it fairy tale chic, which I guess there is a trend in contemporary clothing, which she tried to capture some of and emulate while still trying to keep that timeless quality.
One other issue, of course, is the end of Act 1 to make sure that people know that there's an Act 2. You know, when I saw the show before it opened in San Diego, that was a real problem because I was told that like half the audience would walk out. They think that's it.
We still get leavers, and we actually station one of our ushers in the outer lobby to kind of remind people that the show isn't over.
One of the extraordinary things about the show, of course, is that Act 1 has a happy ending, and it's basically all the fairy tales come together, and then Act 2 is what happens after.
Happily ever after.
There are also 2 wolves, and that's new, too.
No, there's actually a precedent for that.
Really?
There have been productions that have used the 2 wolves before, so ours isn't the first.
Summarize your feelings about Into the Woods in terms of its quality as a show?
I think Into the Woods is, it's like a tone poem for theater. You know, it's like something by Richard Strauss, or it spins such a magnificent tapestry of character and story and relationships and the world of mythology that is perceivable, I think, at its best on a sort of sub-intellectual level. I mean, you're sitting there with this Rapunzel up in the tower and Jack coming down the beanstalk and the witch singing Children Will Listen and Cinderella and Red singing No One Is Alone. And it's just these songs cannot so much be heard in the concept of moving a specific story forward, like, say, you would move forward with You Got Trouble, Folks, right here in River City, which is very clearly a storytelling kind of song, or The Jets Are Gonna Get Their Way Tonight, or Just You Wait, Henry Higgins. I think these stories happen on a more mythical landscape where characters are deeper and broader and bigger than everyday.
This is a brilliant, brilliant score of music, and the lyrics are extraordinary.
No, the lyrics are just mind-boggling. And again, they leave a more of a, they leave, it's like listening to somebody sing T.S. Eliot, because their impact on you is not clearly narrative. It's more onomatopoetic. And you know, I think that's sometimes something Sondheim was really experimenting with when he got to Into the Woods. Maybe he was influenced by Philip Glass, I think, at that time. But you hear his kind of repetitions of musical phrases, just, you know, this is repetition, repetition, repetition. So he's sort of incanting a spell, you know, incanting a spell and using the words in a kind of an incantation more than a narrative.
Bill English, let's talk briefly about the past season. Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo, Storefront Church, Jerusalem Seminar. We'll talk about Bauer separately in a moment. Which of these shows do you think you were most successful at?
Well, Bengal Tiger was a huge, important piece to me. I was very, very happy with that production. I felt like we really made it as beautiful as it could be, you know, sort of the ugliness of the Baghdad era, and captured, I think, the timeless, eternal feeling of the desert and the spiritual quest of mankind. You know, Jerusalem, I would have to say, is probably one of my most satisfying experiences working on theater in my life. I think it's such an enormous piece, and so many characters again. And
when you say it's most satisfying, why?
I think what Jez Butterworth is attempting to do there is something truly Shakespearean. It's like I used to say, if Shakespeare had been alive today, this is the play he would have written. Because you've got these characters, and they all have soliloquies and arias, and the story is 3 hours long, you know, and the stories are interwoven, and you get almost to the end of the play, and things are winding up, and, oh no, let's stop for this wonderful drunken aria from the bartender who just stumbles on in the midst of all the conflict and pours his soul out to, you know, to Johnny. And you wouldn't find that in a contemporary play. But Shakespeare would stop for that. He'd stop for the gravedigger, you know, or something completely out of context in the whole huge landscape of this story he's telling, you know. And I just, to dig my teeth into something like that, I kind of reveled in it.
You're listening to an interview with Bill English, who is the artistic director of San Francisco Playhouse. Bill English, I'm wondering if like deep down, there's something about you that loves just epic theater.
Last season, definitely. I no sooner picked the season than I've said, oh my God, what have I done? I felt before I started even working on that season that I wanted our 11th season to be big. I wanted to deal with big stories and big issues and, you know, big things. And we definitely succeeded in doing that. And we didn't kill ourselves along the way. But we had some big casts and like you say, big shows. Those three in particular.
And Bauer was a world premiere, and I'm put off by world premieres. At first I thought, hey, world premieres are cool when they're at the Magic, but I get a little bit tired because they're never quite ready. They can't be. They're just in their first incarnation. Bauer actually seemed a little further along than most world premieres, which is why it's going to New York now.
Well, we worked on it for almost 3 years. You know, we did probably 5 public readings of it, and we did 4 workshops, which were week-long exercises with myself and the playwright and the actors, you know, slogging through the script, working every other day so that the playwright, Lauren Gunderson, could go home and make changes. You read through a script on Monday, and on Wednesday, she shows up with 35 new pages. You know, you read through it on Wednesday, and you show up Friday with 27 new pages. It was just a work of love from the very beginning between she and myself as a director and our dramaturg, Jordan Puckett, and our Bauer expert, Roland Weinstein, who was just of immeasurable value because he knows more than any living human being about Rudolf Bauer. You know, we got to the third public reading, which we invite our subscribers and our patrons to come see and then invite their feedback. We had intended it to go into the two-play Sandbox World Premiere Series, which we do in a smaller venue. But our patrons were saying, well, you can't waste this on the Sandbox. You should move this straight to the main stage. And, of course, at that point, I'm only seeing the flaws, and I didn't really believe it. But we did indeed do that. We took their advice, and we just kept working on it. And then we finished up the run, you know, in April. And then Lauren and I met and watched it a couple times in the last week, and she's generated a new draft and a half. And we're going to have another reading July 18th of the new draft so that she can work on it some more before we go back into rehearsals for the New York version August 11th.
So you're going to be going to New York and working on it?
Absolutely. Our stage manager for Into the Woods is the same stage manager for Bauer, so we're going to need to relieve her mid-run, and then she'll go into the Bauer rehearsals. The set is sitting backstage, and it will be boxed up and put in a truck and driven across the country.
How did New York come together then?
Elizabeth Kleinhans, who is the artistic director at 59 East 59, emailed me and said she was coming to San Francisco and wanted to meet with artistic directors. And I very much have admired the 59 East 59 Theater and their work in New York, so I said, sure, come on over. The Primary Stages and the other New York Theater Company had been doing their seasons at 59 East 59, and they were leaving, moving to another theater. And so to fill the gap, they decided to have a subscription series of world premieres from outside New York. And so she was looking for ideas. And she said, if you have anything, send it to me. And a little later, I thought, well, Bauer might be something that they would like, because it's largely a New York story. It's a story that involves the Guggenheim Museum and Hilla Riebe, who was the original curator, and Rudolf Bauer, for whom the Guggenheim Museum was being built. And so I sent her and Peter Thier, her partner and managing director, a copy of the script, and they just really liked it. So they invited us to talk more about it, and it ended up becoming part of that season.
Bill English, SF Playhouse, the new season. Let's talk a little bit about that. The first show is Ideation by Aaron Loeb, which is another world premiere. Is this one, like Bauer, gone through like 3 years of work?
Ideation is not actually a commission of ours. It was workshopped at the Playwrights Foundation, I believe, and another theater company before us. And he sent me a script early on, and I just totally fell in love with it. And so we did a reading of it. And after the reading, we offered him the spot in the Sandbox series. Ideation actually appeared in our Sandbox series of two world premieres that we do last fall at our old venue up on Sutter Street. It was such a tremendous success. It sold out every single performance, got rave reviews, despite the fact that we don't advertise or promote the Sandbox series at all.
What's it about?
It's about a group of think tank geniuses who work for a big consulting firm who are brought together to discuss a morally ambiguous project that they start to have serious doubts about who it is that's hiring them to research this project and whether they should or should not, in good conscience, continue to work on it. I always had this idea that there should be a play or a movie about the carpenters and plumbers who built Auschwitz. That these are ordinary people. They have kids in school and homes they need to pay for, and they've been called out here into the woods to build this system of barracks. And they don't really know what it, they're told that it's going to be for the military. And then perhaps one of the plumbers at lunch hour is commenting that the pipe he's been given to use, you know, seems to be for gas and not for water. And so he has a question about that, and the other guys go, oh, they probably just ran out of water pipe. It'll work. Just forget it. And so this little idea in my head, when I saw a script for Ideation, I thought, well, this is it. It's a play about how ordinary people in the workplace, in regular daily lives, can come to face a moral dilemma about whether they should or should not continue to cooperate with their boss's instructions. And that's basically what Ideation deals with. It deals with complicity and our moral responsibility to take a stand on things that may be up in our jobs.
The next show you have is still to be announced, so you have one show coming in.
Yes. Yeah, I have a couple of candidates, but I haven't firmed up the rights to either, and so I can't speak yet.
And then there's Tree, which is a regional premiere. Where does that come from?
Tree is written by Julie Hebert, who used to be an associate director at the Magic Theater years ago. She directed many shows there and started writing plays, which performed there when John Lyon was the artistic director, and she subsequently moved to Los Angeles and has been a producer and a writer for numerous television series and quite a successful writer. And I got the script from Olivier Sultan, who is an agent at CAA. I just fell in love with it, and we'd been looking for a project for Carl Lumley, an actor we work with a lot, and Susie Damolano, an actor we work with a lot, to do together. And this seemed like the perfect show.
And it's about race and family?
It is about family. It's about a short order, black short order cook from Chicago who's got a mother with Alzheimer's and a teenage daughter that's trouble, living alone, kind of slogging through his life. And there's a knock at the door, and he comes to the door, and there's a white woman standing there from New Orleans who says, "Hi, I'm your sister." That's the setup.
Then there's Stupid Effing Bird by Aaron
Which we
Posner.
Can't even say on KPFA.
Right.
They did this play at the Woolly Mammoth last season, and it just was getting these tremendous reviews. And so I sent off for a copy and read it, and I think I had decided I wanted to do it at about page 10. It's a very, very contemporary reimagining of The Seagull, hence the title. And Aaron Posner is a playwright and, of course, a director. He just directed Comedy of Errors out at Cal Shakes. And Susie and I actually met with him. Susie's going to be directing Stupid Effing Bird. I almost said it. We met with him to talk about it. And his impulse behind writing it was that he loves classics. And, you know, he's aware of how revolutionary Seagull was in its time, how Seagull, in a way, because it was the first of the great Chekhov plays, you know, created modern theater. It was one of the very, along with Ibsen's early plays, was the very, very first of the realistic plays. And so he really wanted to sort of give the audience a feeling of that revolutionary spirit. So by setting it in a super ultra-contemporary environment, sort of, I like to call it Seagulls Meets Girls, where the language is super up-to-date, but the story is very much respected. It's definitely an affectionate adaptation of The Seagull.
When you're trolling around for different shows for upcoming seasons, you said you saw the reviews. I mean, how do you find these things?
It's my job. You know, I skulk around the internet pretty much every day. I probably read 300-400 plays a year. And then Susie and I make an obligatory trip to London/Mecca a year to see plays, and 4 or 5, sometimes 6 trips to New York. I would go to the Woolly Mammoth's website because it's a theater that I deeply respect. I think the Woolly Mammoth is a theater that, if you look at the plays, type of plays they'd present, you'd see there's a kind of commonality there in terms of edgier, fair plays that confront the audience a little bit more directly with things than some theater, other theaters do. And so I'll say to myself, well, let's see what the Woolly Mammoth is up to this season. So I go there, and I'm immediately, of course, attracted to the title. And so I read the Washington Post review and am kind of impressed by it. And then I'll get my literary manager, Jordan Puckett, to get me a copy. And there you go.
So the next play is Trouble Cometh by Richard Dresser. That's a world premiere?
Yes, it absolutely is. And we're thrilled to have it. Richard Dresser's a major American playwright who's, of course, had shows off-Broadway and on-Broadway and throughout the regional theaters of America. You know, a lot of his shows premiered at the Humana Festival in years past and have gone on to get dozens of productions around the country. This project came to me through an agent at Gersh, Seth Gluin, who I was saying, so what do you got? And he said, well, I've got a possibility of this world premiere by Richard Dresser, but it comes with a director attached. And her name is May Adralis. And it's so funny because I had just met her a week before I talked to Seth at the Humana Festival, where I'd seen her do a beautiful job of directing something. So I said, no problem. I'd love to work with Richard, love to work with May. It took us about almost 3 years to get the play, though, because at some point the Denver Center got interested in it and they were developing it for a while. And then they did readings of it, and then I guess they decided not to do it, and it came back to us again, and so we're really excited to do it. It's a play about a bunch of kind of up-and-coming entertainment executives that are trying to develop a new television show, kind of like a reality TV show, but they take the depravity of reality TV to a kind of deeper and funnier level than reality TV has gone before.
Finally, Bill English, the last show next year, which will be, I guess, the summer show, is Company, Stephen Sondheim and George Firth's show.
I'm drawn to Company for a lot of reasons. I watched a couple of the versions, the version that was in New York where the actors played the instruments, which we may be doing. I have some very good actors who play very well. And then I also saw the, I think it was a Lincoln Center version that starred
Neil Patrick Harris,
right. And I just was struck at how completely undated the show was. I had this feeling because it was so early in the 70s, right? I thought, oh my God, Company is surely going to feel dated. And I was just amazed that it wasn't. I thought it was interesting also that both of those versions of the play, there just was just no ethnicity in those productions. And so I really wanted to try and capture a wider band of humanity and cultural humanity. We're also interested in shaking up some of the sexuality in the play, identities of the couples and what kind of couples they are and what Bobby may or may not have committed fully to one brand of sexuality or another, and that may be part of his problem in addition to just deciding whether to couple or not. Well, my idea is not that he's gay or that he's straight, but that he's not sure what he is. And I will clearly have to get permission for a few of the casting choices I'd like to make.
You still need to go back to New York and get permission for the changes.
It would be two casting changes that would involve a man playing a woman's part or a woman playing a man's part. But like I say, I haven't entered that fray yet.
One of the couples and one of Bobby's girlfriends, I would think.
It could be. Well, you've just helped me out with a good start on that. One of the stewardesses, one of the flight attendants, yeah.
Barcelona. Sandbox series, continuing this year with Schooner and In a Word.
Well, the Sandbox series, we're so proud of it. It's really, really come of age. The last two Sandboxes, Grounded, which was the solo piece that my daughter Lauren performed last August, that's also sold out every show, and Ideation have just been really lifted the sandbox up to where it's become much more powerful, and we're now putting more money into it, and we are attracting some writers with real national reputations to the sandbox. Schooner has actually been renamed 77% because we just did a workshop of Schooner. And Rinna Groff, who is the playwright, who is a very well-known New York playwright who wrote Compulsion, the play that Mandy Patinkin starred in at Berkeley Rep and subsequently at The Public, is the playwright. It's really a wonderful, wonderful play about a couple whose roles are quite reversed. You know, the wife is a CEO, high-powered type, and the husband is a man who does illustrations for children's books and is primarily the stay-at-home parent, and their struggle to decide whether to have a third child. Really wonderful play. And then the other one, In a Word, by Lauren Yee. Now, Lauren Yee is a local playwright, but she's living in New York now and came through the MFA program at Yale and is had some big New York successes already, but is coming back to help us work on In a Word.
And to find out about these, you have to go to the SF Playhouse website.
There will definitely be social media kind of letting you know and press releases and such.
I noticed that the only show you're directing next year is Company.
I'm going to direct the holiday show, the unnamed holiday show. I'll give you a clue, and we'll see if you or anyone else can guess who it is. It's a musical. Most likely going to be a musical, which one would not necessarily think of as a holiday show, and is the only musical ever written by this particular composer.
Bill English, with the success of SF Playhouse over the past couple of years and now Sandbox, do you have any other ways that you plan to expand SF Playhouse over the coming years?
Well, I think we're right now really needing to develop a second space for the Sandbox. Right now, the Sandbox is a nomad in the sense that when we were up at Sutter Street, we had two spaces. We had a 100-seat theater and a 50-seat theater and a rehearsal hall all on the same floor. But when we moved down to the much, much nicer theater at 450 Post, we lost our rehearsal space and our second theater. And so we've just recently gotten a rehearsal space at 323 Geary, which is just a block from us. But our sandboxes are appearing at various venues. The next one in August will be at the ACT Costume Shop space, and in the fall at our old theater up on Sutter again. So that's something we're working forward on. We're collaborating with a lot of other theaters on plays. We're collaborating with the Vineyard Theater on a commission for Christopher Chen. We're collaborating with 59 East 59 on Bauer. We're collaborating with Broadway producer Debbie Bisno on a commission for a young playwright named Rhett Rossi. So we're definitely trying to spread our wings and develop pieces that can go beyond our shores.
You've been listening to an interview with Bill English, the co-founder and artistic director of San Francisco Playhouse, SF Playhouse. Into the Woods is playing through September 6th. For more information, you can go to their website, sfplayhouse.org. I'm Richard Walensky for Open Book.